Okay, we're just coming up on 7:30, so go ahead and mute all. As usual, everybody has the ability to unmute themselves. Please feel free to do so if you have a comment or question, or remute yourself afterwards. Later on this evening, thanks to hard work of Alan, the deck in PDF format, the contents of the chat window, and the audio track will be posted on our website for your reviewing pleasure. I'd like to welcome any new people we have with us tonight. As always, we welcome guests at any time. And I have just pasted into the chat. If you do want to join, I pasted in the URL, or you can just go to our homepage and click on the Join or Renew button at the top. It's just $20 a year to join the group, but feel free to continue coming to our meetings as a guest if you so choose. And I think with that, I will turn it over to Alan to lead us through tonight's deck. Alan, take it away.
Okay, thank you very much, Chris. First up, a little reminder, public service announcement. Our June meeting is our pizza queue. And as usual, if you plan to attend, you'll need to register because the amount of pizza is based on the number of people who register. So say that you are coming, if you're bringing a guest, what kind of pizza you like, and send an email to pizzaparty@opcug.ca. So we hope to see you on June 11th in Britannia Park. Okay, first up, we had a question in the chat last week. Eldon has a Lenovo E560 laptop, and he bought a battery for it. I think this must be, well, it is a third-party battery for the laptop. It works, but then it works initially as the machine boots, but then after that, it automatically shuts down, and it only takes a few minutes, and then he's out of battery power. So he sent it in for servicing, and it still did the same thing. So we took it to a computer store, Laurier Computers, and they found that it actually, as a third-party battery, it doesn't have some circuitry that would prevent this shutdown problem. So his question was if anybody had a solution that would solve the problem without having to spend another $100 plus for a genuine Lenovo battery. So In the members forum, Tom had mentioned that it's possible that the battery could be rebuilt, and he mentioned a couple of different companies that do that, one being Total Battery on Newmarket Street, and another one to check was Batteries Dixon on Colonnade. I didn't see any other bright suggestions, so if anybody has anything to chip in on how to solve Eldon's problem, then please put something in the chat and we'll get back to it later on. Okay, next up, we had to cut Tom off last week. He gave his kind of main presentation, but he was going to give a demo of the Calibre app. So I said we would make it the first thing this week. So here we are. So Tom, I will give you slide control right now so you can change these slides. And then I guess you will switch over to your own computer to do the actual demo.
Okay. I will do that. I haven't any experience changing slides, but it looks easy. So there it works. So what do you need to be able to put stuff into Calibre? I got a request that I show how to do, do things from the Ottawa Public Library to be able to put them in your library. This would really only be legal for public domain things and Cory Doctorow books and other things that are in the public domain. So what you need is Calibre, which is this, which is available here, which is the program that will store books and allow you to see them and do a bunch of other stuff like I said last week. You need the DRM plugin, which you can get here. There is another DRM plugin that you can use if you have Kindle books that you want to remove the DRM from to, in order to back them up for books that you've bought. And you can buy this at for $30 or $25 for the management program from epubboard.com. And thirdly, or as an alternative, you need all Adobe Digital Editions. This is the Adobe program that will show library books. And you can view them inside Adobe Editions. What has happened? Something's happening. It happened, and it shouldn't have happened.
Should not.
Let's go back. I did not do anything. This was my guardian agent who's messing me up. Okay, lots of, okay. So there's the prerequisites. Public domain in Canada? Well, public domain is when books are available, or not only books, photographs, anything that's been created as an intellectual work in Canada. And so you can either release it directly to public domain, such as Cory Doctorow and others, including Microsoft, or it's old. And the rules regarding this are all captured pretty nicely for Canada at UBC in that particular URL. You can store public domain or your DRM-free books, the ones that you own, plus things like the old things like Dostoevsky, William Shakespeare. You may have heard of these authors. There's also other sources for books, such as Humble Bundle. They have a whole bunch of books, and they're all DRM-free, and they are very technical, so that you may be able to use them. There's also a whole bunch of websites, about 15 of them, that are available at this domain at ePubBoard. This site's for public domain books. This is the Gutenberg Project and a whole bunch of others. There's also other publishers, such as Microsoft, that also publish DRM-free books. All of those you can store in Caliber and view them later. Revert them, index them, your choice. So, now I've been asked specifically how you download from a library, from the library, the Ottawa Public Library. Basically, you open the ACSM file to get Adobe to download the book. You go back to the library, you open the file in Explorer, you drag to Caliber, and then you can view it, you can edit the metadata, you can export it to Kindle. So, any questions so far?
I don't believe so, Tom.
Nothing in the chat.
Okay, thank you for putting all the links in the chat. Thank you very much. Okay, now I want to share my screen. And there. Advanced sharing options. It's odd. I don't think okay, now I got it. Okay. And share. And this is the Ottawa Public Library. This is the OverDrive version, so you can download books. I might as well sign in. Select my library. You notice there's a bunch of libraries here. They're all amalgamated, and you can look for any books you want in any of these libraries. I'll just go to the Ottawa Public Library, and I'll sign in. And now I'm signed in. My account, I want to search. Well, let's see. What do we have here? I want Dostoevsky, but it's hard to spell, so So William Shakespeare. There's a whole bunch of things here, and there's ebooks, there's audiobooks, and they're all Shakespeare has been dead for 400 years or so. Basically all his works are in the public domain. So, but this is by Celeste Manris. These are by other people, but there's Romeo and Juliet. How much more classic can we get? So let's borrow that. Oh no, I don't want to do that. I decided earlier that I wanted to do the sonnets. Where are the sonnets? They're down here somewhere. There they are. Shakespeare's sonnets. You know what a sonnet? The 14 lines. There's a whole bunch of them. And he was in love with some people. So let's borrow them. And I will borrow it for 7 days. And I want to download. And as you can see here, there's EPUB book and open EPUB book. I found it more useful to use the EPUB book. It's less messy to be able to extract an EPUB book and put it in Calibre. So I choose EPUB book. And now it says download this blah, 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 dot ACSM. I don't know what ACSM stands for. It's something like Adobe Common Special or Shakespeare something or other. I don't know. But ACSM, and what I want to do is open it, because it's, as you can see, it's 1.84 kilobytes. So that's very small, and it's not a full book. In fact, it's only a kind of placeholder for the book. And when you try to open it, it will open it in Adobe Reader, download complete. Let's move that. It's opening it in another monitor, so I will move that over. There it is. So here's Adobe Live. This is the Adobe Digital Editions, which I said you have as a research, as a prerequisite. And you can actually go through it and read it like this. You can see all the sonnets. Unthrifty loveliness, why dost thou spend upon thyself thy beauty's legacy? Just picture gets jealous. But let's go back to the library. Oh, there's Moby Dick. It's another public domain thing. 719 pages. That's an effort. And Shakespeare's Spawn. It's 159 pages. Probably, I think it was one page per, I think it was one page per thing. Yeah, one page. So it's 159 sonnets. But what you want to do here is you want to show the file in the in Explorer, and that also shows on a different monitor, but here it is, shakespearesonnets.epub. Now, what I want to do is switch over to Calibre, which I have already running here. This is Calibre. Oh, wake up, Calibre. There's Calibre. Let's move him to one side here. And as you can see, I have a few things in Calibre. But what I want to do is I want to move Shakespeare's sonnets in there. And I just drag it in. And I have Shakespeare's sonnets. So now I don't need that thing. In fact, at this point, I can right-click on here. I can return the borrowed item so that other people can borrow it. And this appears, I want to return this to. And now, I guess I returned it earlier. Don't know why. So let's delete that. Remove from library. And exit. So now I'm in Calibre. And as you can see, there's a whole bunch of books here. It actually, as you can see, there's a whole bunch of things here. And none of these, some of these, a lot of these don't have the pictures. Lots of, there are others that do. I don't know why these don't. Anyway, Shakespeare's sonnets. At this point, I can type in the V and I can view the sonnets. I can also apparently edit. So I wanted to Shakespeare. If I wanted to edit this, I could edit it and put William Shakespeare Jr. But I want to view it, so I type in V and it should view it. There it is. And let's get bigger. And this may look familiar to you. As you can see, he thought in Roman numerals, apparently. Unthrifty loveliness, why dost thou spend upon thyself thy beauty's legacy? You can exit this, go back to here. You can go look at any of the things you have here, any of the books you have. But you can also edit them. I haven't. Let's see. If I right-click here, I can edit the metadata individually. And this is all the metadata. Shakespeare's Sonnets by William Shakespeare Jr. You can change the cover. You can browse it and change it. You can remove it. You can trim borders if it has a border around it. You can generate a cover. I haven't tried that. In fact, I haven't tried any of these things. This is the ISBN number of the book. This is the date I downloaded, which happens to be today. The publisher is not here. Sorry, published. The date is not here, but the publisher is there, the languages, and this is the sort of comments, and you can put a, you can edit it, and there's a whole bunch of editing stuff here, like, well, let's see. If I go here, sonnet one, whoops, sonnet one. It's that, so you can go into things and you can edit it. You can title, there is the title here, but you can also change the title sort, which is how it'll end up as, if you sort it. You can see the size of it here. It's it's 0.28 megabytes. So it's 280 kilobytes. It's not that big. There's a theory sometimes, for example, Louise Penny has a series of books about a Quebec detective, and it would be in the, and you could put in a series. This is not his place, so it could be poetry. Shakespeare poetry. I don't know what the number is. This is, you can set the metadata for the book from the selected format, which I don't understand. You could recycle it. So this is removing the select format from this book, which in this case would get rid of EPUB. I think if there were a PDF or something in there, you could actually get rid of a particular format and just keep the EPUB, which is usually smaller than the PDF. But this is how you go in and edit it. And I'll lose unsaved changes. Sure, I want to lose them. The other things you can do, you can add books, you can get books from a commercial place, like this is from Amazon UK, let's see, Amazon AU, Kindle, and so on. You can get books from a whole variety of places, and it will help you. You can search for them. You don't, these are things that you can probably buy rather than get for free. Archive.org, they'll all be there, available for free. But you can look for a book on all of these sites all at once, and it will show you all the places that you will see it. Add books. I've already done that, but you can add a book directly by pointing to the EPUB, like shakespearesonnets.epub. I have it set up as a default in my digital editions. OBook DDRM. I'm not sure what this is. Ah, these are for Kobo books, but I don't have any Kobo things installed. You can edit the metadata, which is what we did already. You can remove books, like, for example, Shakespeare's sonnets. I could remove the book, and it's gone. Shakespeare's sonnets, I just deleted.
When you downloaded that book from the library, and you had it for 7 days, and then you basically returned it.
That's right.
What happens to the copy that you have in 7 days?
And if it's in Caliber, if it's in Adobe or Caliber, the actual book stays there. But if it's in Adobe, you can't read it anymore. It will not let you read it. If I go back to,
And then Carol had a question that, does it let you know if the book's unable to be downloaded?
Well, if you're trying to download something that you can't, then it won't let you. It won't be there. You won't be able to download it if you're not able to download it.
Steve points out that ACSM stands for Adobe Content Server Message.
Oh.
So now you know.
Wow. Thank you, David.
Okay, well, I think that's good, Tom. Thank you very much.
Okay.
So we'll move back to...
And I will unshare. And there you are.
Okay, thank you. So let me see if I can share my screen again now. There we go.
Oh, yes. Are there any questions?
I went through everything that was in the chat.
Yep.
Okay, so next up, Stu has a thing here, a follow-up on our discussion of eSIM cards. So, Stu, you want to tell us about this?
Okay. Well, there's not much to say. It's a it's a loony link, if we will. It's a Canadian company called Sweat Free, and you can buy an eSIM with data that doesn't expire unless you use it. So that's its unique distinction. Most of the time you buy data and you use it up, it's gone within a period of time, whether you use it or not. Well, not this one. It's a bit expensive, but what the hell? If you can afford to travel, you can probably afford a spare tire for your data bucket, which is what this thing sort of markets itself as. What is it? The data says here, I buy it for $50, but there's a sale on for much less. And if you go on their website, they have significant discounts on sale at the moment. Not for me. I don't travel. So what can I say? But, if you can afford to travel and you need a little bit of extra data in your back pocket, it's worth considering.
Okay, thanks, Stu. And the options for avoiding roaming fees, if you want to... That 1 gigabyte for $16 right now is Canada, U.S., and Mexico. But if you want either 100 or 150 countries, then there are options for, I think it was $60 and $70 to give you data in those overseas countries.
Yeah, it's international as well. It's
at an extra cost, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's data is a fluid thing. Go and see what's available at the moment. And
Linda and I just got back from a trip in Upper New York State, and we both had bought eSIMs from Saley. And I pasted in just a little bit about this in the chat. Basically, I'm not sure I can recommend Saley. We had really spotty coverage. And the reason why you want to buy an eSIM with coverage in foreign countries is you have coverage all the time. And I complained to them afterwards, and they basically said, oh, we're sorry you had such a terrible experience. They didn't offer any credit or refund or anything like that. I had asked them if they had coverage maps that could tell me, you know, if I buy an eSIM for, you know, U.S. or Sweden or wherever, do you have coverage maps that can let me know exactly what I can expect? And they just said no. So buyer beware, I guess. It was really inexpensive. I think it was under $10 U.S. for 1 gig of data. It does expire, though. It's good for a month, and you have to activate it within a month, I believe, and then it will expire a month after that. So just a bit of a cautionary tale with Saley.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. So Stuart,
homework. Do your homework is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, if they don't have a coverage map, you can't do much homework, I guess.
You can also buy a physical SIM when you get to your destination. I mean, when I went to Tanzania, I bought like a SIM for about $5 US or so, for about five or ten gigabytes that lasted me for the 2 or 3 weeks I was there.
Yeah. Yeah. The significant point of this Canadian seller is an expire. So even if you don't travel, you can put it in your phone if your phone supports eSIMs. You can have it and keep it as you need it. Even if
one of the things they sell it for, Stuart, is for outages.
Well, exactly.
If the cell thing goes down, I guess your eSIM doesn't work either.
this thing came about just after the big, who was it? Went out just the other day.
Oh, Bell.
Well, a whole bunch of people went out. Virgin Bell. I had no home internet for half a day, and if I hadn't been with another mobile provider, I would have had no data as well. But if I'd had this eSIM in my back pocket, I would have had some data.
Okay, well, I guess buyer beware. Okay, thanks very much, Stu and everybody.
That's everyone.
Moving along, Chris has something on Windows for us.
Yeah, so Paul Thurrott is a well-known blogger and journalist and so forth. He's big into Windows for sure, but he's not above tearing a strip off of Microsoft when he feels that they're not doing a good job or doing bad by their customers. So he has a 10-minute video in his Hands on Windows channel, and he outlines five options for what Windows 10 users can look forward to this October. And so if you haven't made the jump yet, and there's nothing really new in here, but it might just different words surrounding things and different emphasis on things, it might be worth watching that to decide whether you want to choose one of those five options before October. And then further to that, I came across this just the other day. It was posted from Linus Tech Tips, and it's how to set up Windows properly. And so this is a little bit on the geeky side. Some of these things a neophyte is probably not going to want to actually do, but it's probably worth looking at all of the video anyways, because some of the things would apply to just about everybody, such as managing your startup apps, deep bloating, whether you actually need any antivirus beyond what Microsoft is providing, and so forth. So it's not a bad video. It's a little bit fast-paced. Look through things. Don't be terribly upset if you get a little bit lost in it all. But some good information in there. And that's all I have on that.
Okay. Thanks, Chris. Okay, next up I have part two of my tale of war, I guess, on or at least instructions on how to transfer an app between Android phones. And if you recall, my wife has a new phone, and one of the issues was that She likes to use iBird Pro, which is a paid application, but they seem to have either gone defunct or they've gone quiet, and I couldn't get any response on their website. In the first part, I showed how you can actually transfer the app by creating a backup of the app from the first phone, transferring the APK file to the second phone, and then installing it, because APK is an installable Android program. So we have the iBird Pro running on the new phone, and we can try and click on a bird here to get some information, and we have a little problem because it says it can't make a connection. And then when you try to install the local database, the problem now is that I think because the iBird Pro is not online on the internet, then you can't download the database from them, and so it says that it has nowhere to put it. It can't put it in the internal storage in the phone's RAM or memory, and also if there's an SD card in there, an external SD card, it can't use that either. So both storage locations are blocked. However, remember, we still have the system on the old phone. So I asked Perplexity, where does iBird Pro store its database files? I didn't know how many files there were. So I said, where are they on an Android phone? And it says, well, it should be in this Android OBB and then the com.wattbird.pro, which is the folder which is for iBird Pro. So on the old phone, all I need to do is try and find that location. So here we are in the main storage, in the Android, in the Android folder, the data, the com.wattbird, and the files folder. And on my system, it's in files. And here is a .obb file, which is the online, is the offline database file. And you notice it's 1.4 gigabytes. So all I need to do is copy that to my new phone. So I grab the thing here in Explorer. So I've got the OBB file here in from my downloads. So I've basically done the same thing I did with the APK file. I find the OBB file on my old phone. I transfer that OBB file to my new phone in the downloads folder. So I've got this this database file. So I say, all right, I want to copy this database file. I right click on it, pull up this context menu. I say I want to copy it. And it says, okay, you want to copy the OBB file to, on the new file, to androiddata.com.wattbird.pro, etc., etc. And I say, okay. And it says, well, you need to give it permission, right? Special access to internal storage. It needs some permission to get there. So I say, okay, continue, use this folder. And it says, can't use this folder. So here's a problem where I've got the file, I've got the local database file now on the new phone, but I can't store it in the Android data system folder because Android has that folder locked for mere mortals. Now, in the past, I've got around this by rooting the phone and obviously giving myself root access. I can do anything as root. So I went back to Perplexity and I said, okay, how do I access this Android folder? And I want to go to the main storage. So storage emulated zero is the main storage. And then Android data, the folder on my Moto 5 5G phone. And it says, use a third-party file manager called Shizuku. Or use a third-party file manager, so a file manager app, with the Shizuku app, right? And Shizuku allows enhanced permissions for file managers without rooting the device. So this is really quite interesting, right? Now you can get root access to Android folders which are normally locked by using this Shizuku app. So let's go and have a look at Shizuku. And sure enough, it's available in the Play Store. And it says it provides a convenient way to use system APIs and convenient for apps that require special permissions, essentially. So I go back to Perplexity and say, okay, how do I set it up? And it says, well, you have to enable developer options on the phone, and then you have to enable wireless debugging, and eventually you need to start Shizuku using wireless debugging. So we're basically going to follow the bouncing ball here. So we're going to download Shizuku from the Play Store. We're going to install it. So we've installed this app now on the new phone. But you notice here that it's not running, right? So the first thing I need to do is I need to pair the app to my phone. So when I do that, it says it needs to access a local network and it needs developer options set. And developer options I know because having to root the phone, you have to have developer options set. So I know how to do that, but essentially what you have to do is you have to go to the settings, find the about phone option, and you have to tap that 7 times, right? A lunatic thing that you have to do, but that's the way that you enable developer options. So you have to tap that option 7 times, and eventually you will get the thing to tell you that developer options is now live as an option under the system menu here. So now we can go to the developer options. Remember, we needed wireless debugging. So we scroll down the list here until we find wireless debugging. We turn that on, and then we go see what it says. And it says, well, pair a device with a pairing code, right? So, I mean, normally you'd be pairing your phone to your car or your phone to your PC. What I want to do here is pair my phone to Shizuku. So I say, okay, let's go and do that. So it searches for a pairing service. And it finds one, and it gives me a pairing code, right? So I've got 118.661. So in the Shizuku app, right, we're running Shizuku here. We put in that code, 118.661, and we say, okay, go. And now it's still not running, but at least we've done the pairing. So we've done this step right here where we've paired Shizuku to the phone. So now we can start Shizuku. And when we do that, it goes through a bunch of stuff here. And we just wait for a second. And then, bingo, Shizuku is now running. Right? So we need to establish developer options. We need to turn on wireless debugging. We need to pair Shizuku. We need to start Shizuku. And now we should be golden. Right? Now we've essentially have Shizuku running, which allows us to use advanced permissions on things that we want to do to the Android file system. All right, so let's go back to Explore. Let's go back to the downloads and find that OBB file again. And now we're going to copy it again. And we're going to copy it to androiddata.com.wattbird.pro/files, which is where it was on the old machine. So I've got this folder set up on the new phone. So now I just say OK. And here we are. Here we are in storage emulated 0, androiddata.com.wattbird.pro, files. And there is the OBB file in this special Android data folder, which is where it was on the old phone. Now we have the same database file on the new phone. So now, if we go back to iBird Pro, and I make a note here that you may have to issue a mount command. And I did this originally, and it wanted me to mount the folder. The second time I did it, it didn't ask me to do that. So you may have to do it and you may not. But anyway, if you have to do it, just say yes, allow the mount. But then once you've done that, then you can choose a bird again. Well, lo and behold, the order flycatcher. Fitzview or Peewiz or something. So here we are. Now we've got the actual bird. And we've got the general tab here, some photographs. We've got the range. We've got sounds. And the database is now working. And we have all of the tools available for this bird. So we've transferred the app from one phone to the second phone. We've transferred the local database from the first phone to the second phone. And now we have, now we're golden. We have the thing actually running the way it was on the old phone. But even better than that, this Shizuku thing is great because it gives you these advanced permission options for all kinds of things. One of the problems with Android I have is I like to use this menu type system for my browser. Right? So I don't use favorites and bookmarks. I basically have a page, a web page. It has a local file. It's called linux.htm, this particular one. And it's stored in, again, this is the emulated zero is the local storage. It's in the Android data folder. And now this time it's in vivaldi.browser.com files, which is the data location for Vivaldi. This is another one of those Android folders which would normally be locked out. But because I've got this Shizuku thing, I can tell it, give me advanced permissions so I can copy my file to this location right here. So I copy my linux.htm from a download area, from a received files area here, and I copy it to this Android data download. And then that gives me the option to run that file in the browser. So really neat application if you have to do anything with files which would normally be locked up and you wouldn't be able to get to. Okay, so that's it. Any questions there, Chris?
And nothing I see in the chat, but I have a question. Once you've installed this Shizuku, does it just, you can just leave it running and it'll just silently allow you to copy anything anywhere?
Yeah, for this session. And then when you shut the phone down, if you want to do it a second time when you boot the phone up, then you have to install it. You have to run it again.
Okay, but it's already paired.
It's only good for the current session, as it were.
Yeah, okay. It's already paired and everything like that. You just have to go in and say run.
Yeah. Other than that, it just sits there and, you know, doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
Until you need it to.
Yeah.
It's really neat.
Very cool.
Okay. So the next one is yours, Chris.
Yeah, okay. So I just came across this today. It came by email. The National Cybersecurity Alliance is an organization in the States, and quite frankly, most of the advice they have seems to be really geared to neophytes or people who are not really well-versed in security already. They have a lot of very, very good advice at the basic level that is really well explained and can be easily understood by, I think, just about any computer user. And they have this new webinar that is coming up, not tomorrow, but next Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. So it's called Sun, Sand, and Staying Safe Online, and it's all about traveling with your computer. And so as they point out, what you would learn in the webinar is how to use public Wi-Fi safely while you're traveling, how to use devices and accessing your accounts when you're online and you're away from home, and do's and don'ts on that, and how to recognize scams that are out there that are targeting tourists, mm-hmm. but I guess targeting anybody, any kind of scams that you're likely to run into. And in terms of who should attend, basically anybody who is traveling and looking to protect their personal data while staying connected when you're on vacation. So the URL is there, and I'll paste that into the chat as well. So it's free. And everything that I've seen coming out of the National Cybersecurity Alliance has been really good information. It is fairly on the basic level, but it's really well worded. It's very consumable, very understandable information. So I highly recommend that you check out not only just this particular webinar if you're interested in it, but if you check out their homepage, there's a lot of information that they have there that you might be interested in.
That's okay, thanks, Chris. So once in our lives, we're actually ahead of time, and we're into that last 10. Actually, looks like we're in the last 15, but we do have another presentation coming up. But if anybody has any questions or more comments on things that you've seen tonight, now is the time. Put them in the chat or open your microphone and talk. If you've been following the chat, there's a lot of discussion in there about things like digital rights management and eSIMs and travel and so on and so forth. So that will all be on the website later on. I didn't see any questions that we've missed, Chris.
No, I don't think so.
Does that site for travelers have a note in there to remove the sticker for rental cars?
It's an upcoming webinar, so I have no idea the actual content that you'll have on there. Certainly, I think there'll be a Q&A portion of that, and if they don't cover it, it could be raised.
Because that was one thing that we learned the hard way in Australia. Yeah, if you've got a rental car sticker that's anywhere on the car, you'll get targeted.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean by thieves?
Yeah. They broke into our car and stole all our luggage and everything.
Elizabeth had a question about how I knew which file I needed to copy from the old phone to the new phone, and what the error message was. Well, the error message basically was that once I'd copied the file, the app wasn't actually working the way it should, so I knew there was something wrong. And how did I know which file to copy? Well, again, I asked Perplexity how to do that. And it told me that I needed to create this backup of the application on the old phone, copy it to the new phone, and then install it. And you do that by using, if you look at that first presentation, I use a particular file manager that creates a backup as an APK file, transfer the APK file from one phone to the other. And then an APK file is actually installable. So you then install the program on the new phone. And then the next problem was, well, I couldn't copy over the local database. I couldn't download the local database. So I asked Perplexity where it was on the old phone and went and found it and then did the same thing. Copied the database from the old phone to the new phone. But then I ran into that problem where I needed the system permissions to get to the correct folder, which is why I needed that Shizuku app as well. Gee, I don't know what's going on there, but okay.
And Jen had a question. How did you know you had to tap 7 times to get access?
Oh, that's when I had my really old phone, and it ran out of Android updates, I decided I would install a custom ROM. And there are a million instructions on how to do that. One of which is you have to have developer options available, because you need that ADB file permission thing to do all the magic to get the custom ROM to work. So that's a kind of a classic. To get the developer options, you have to know to go to About Phone and tap it 7 times. And it's all over the web. You can look it up. Okay. Let's move on to the wrap-up session. I don't see anything new there.
No, I don't think so.
Bridget Law, our newsletter editor, is running out of newsletter articles. Now, it's not going to be a problem for a little while because Bridget has just published the June newsletter, and we don't have a newsletter in July and August, so we're now talking about articles for September. So if you would like to be an author, you have something to say about anything that's related to computers, Bridget would love to hear from you, and there's her email address to talk to her or to send her an article or whatever. So if you have any articles that you're desperate to be published, then Ottawa PC News is looking for content. We talked about the upcoming pizza queue, and Bridget, I will give you slide control. If I can find you, there you are. I've given you slide control, so now you can tell us all about the pizza party.
Yes, can you hear me? I'm using a different microphone.
Yep.
Okay. All right, I'm back. Hi, everybody. And I'll get started. Good evening. Tonight I have some important updates about our annual pizza party on June 11th. But first, the essential detail is you must register by email to pizzaparty@opcug.ca. I cannot stress this enough. No registration, no pizza. Trust me, you don't want to be the person watching everybody else eat. As Jeff informed us last week, due to a scheduling conflict, Taylor Swift will not be attending our pizza party this year. The moment Jeff heard about the Taylor conflict, he immediately began working his contacts. And Jeff, being the experienced promoter he is, decided to aim high again. So he called Ed Sheeran. Jeff told me Ed lives countryside near Framlingham, England. Here's where it gets interesting. After what Jeff described as a brief but productive discussion, Ed apparently flew to Ottawa to meet with Jeff and check out our venue. They toured the Britannia trolley station together, and according to Jeff, Ed was completely enchanted with the location. So here's the big news. Jeff has officially announced that Ed Sheeran is scheduled to perform at our pizza party on June 11th. Notice I'm using air quotes around scheduled. Jeff insisted on that for what he calls legal reasons. Apparently, Ed was so impressed with our venue and our intimate audience size that he's committed to entertaining us while we eat pizza and argue about the best Linux apps. Now, Jeff learned from the Taylor Swift situation. He didn't want to be caught off guard again, so he arranged for a backup performer. And that backup performer is, well, I'm sorry, it's Bob Harris. Jeff's reasoning was simple. Bob loves to sing, and nobody else wants him, so he's not likely to cancel. So there you have it, folks, our official entertainment lineup for 2025. We have Ed Sheeran providing world-class musical entertainment and Bob Harris providing, well, let's call it enthusiastic participation. But wait, there's more. We've got fantastic prizes lined up for everyone. This year we have 3 ultra-durable roll-up keyboards, perfect for those times when you need to type but also need your keyboard to fit in your back pocket for some reason. We also have 3 Power Saver time chargers because nothing says I'm a PC user like optimizing your charging schedule. And I should mention that all these prizes are courtesy of our generous sponsor, Ban Roll-On Deodorant. Apparently, our sponsors know that gatherings of computer enthusiasts require extra preparation. This is definitely shaping up to be our most ambitious event yet. We'll hold world-class entertainment, the best pizza in Ottawa, fantastic prizes, and most importantly, all the best people in Ottawa. That's you folks. You're guaranteed to have an absolutely fantastic time. It's going to be the kind of event people will talk about for weeks, or at least until the next OPC-UG meeting. The local media has already caught wind of this event, and they're going crazy over it. One news anchor was quoted as saying, "Ottawa's best-kept secret isn't a political scandal. It's free pizza from the OPC-UG. It's hot, it's cheesy, and I'm sharing it with the weather team." Look, all joking aside, this really does turn out to be our best event of the year, every year. It's the one time we all get together in person, away from our screens, to actually see each other's faces and remember that there are real people behind all those Zoom squares. We'll have great pizza, refreshing drinks, delicious desserts, fantastic prizes, and best of all, we'll get to catch up with everyone face-to-face, whether Ed Sheeran shows up or it's just me with my karaoke playlist. I guarantee you'll have a great time. All right, here's your final reminder, Britannia Park Trolley Station, June 11th, 6 p.m. But here's the crucial part. You must register by email at pizzaparty@opcug.ca. Thank you, everyone. I hope to see you all there. And that's it.
Okay, thanks very much, Bridget.
Okay.
People in the chat, people like that.
Okay, I didn't write that.
Great PR for the party, Natalie.
All right, yay. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. I'm bowing. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much. Okay, so final thoughts. our presentations with the Ottawa Public Library coming up, a few of them. And if you need to organize your photos, then Linda, our photo guru, has a presentation at Beaverbrook on the 29th, which is tomorrow. And then if you need to know about AI tools, Chris is going to be talking about those at Cumberland on Saturday. 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And Funly Fonts, that's a great presentation if you haven't seen it as one of our regular meetings. And apparently, Chris, that's online.
Yes, it is. It'll be on Zoom, so you have to register in order to get the URL. The URL will be sent to you from the library, so you do have to log in at the library and register for that one to get the URL.
And just a note here that URL on the screen is a new URL. The library has updated their website, and the old version basically just took you to the massive list of all presentations. And if you use this URL right here, then it narrows it down to just the presentations from the PC user group. And they're in chronological order, so you can see what and when they are. And as Chris says, you have to register to get the URL for the meeting for Zoom or to reserve your place for an in-person meeting.
The Cumberland one is full and has a waiting list. However, if you want to come to that, I would say just come. We don't take attendance or anything like that. There's always no shows, and there's always extra room in the room anyways. So if you do want to come to that AI tools one, just come on out to it.
That's kind of sad, isn't it? They have a waiting list, but if people don't show up, they can't use it.
Yeah, exactly. I think the organizing your photos tomorrow might be full as well. But again, if you're interested, just come.
Okay, thanks very much, Chris. All right, so just a final reminder. Next week will be the first week in June the 4th. So we have our Q&A session next Wednesday. If you have questions or comments on things that we've talked about tonight or topics that you'd like to share, and thanks Stu and Tom for their contributions, and also Bridget on behalf of Bob Harris for the Pizza Q promo. So if you have things like that that you'd like to share, then just send us a note to the suggestion box, and we'll be happy to add you to the agenda. So we're just about at 8:30, so we've had our allotted 1 hour. So thanks very much, everyone, and we'll see you next Wednesday.
Thanks, everyone. See you next week.